I'm Carson Horn, and it's Monday at 10, which means it's time for Talkin' Tumors on Weagle 91.1. So grab your toilet paper and let's get rolling. It's crazy to think, but at the conclusion of today's show, that will wrap up year two of Talkin' Tumors. I am Carson Horn. Thank you all for being tuned in to our final episode of this semester of this year here at Auburn on Weagle 91.1. The show could look a little bit different next year. We'll talk about that a little bit later on in the show, but we've got plenty to dive into. If you thought it was going to be a lackluster, slow show to close out the year, you'd be mistaken, because we've got plenty to get into on today's show. We've got to talk about Jahni Broome's return announcement and what that means for Auburn basketball and what the roster looks like at this point. A former Auburn basketball player had something to say this week after he announced his transfer to a rival school. I've got plenty to say about that. We've got to talk about the latest roster happenings with Auburn football. Auburn football got a big commitment yesterday. We'll dive into that. And then to close out the show, I haven't done this in a while, so I wanted to do this again. I'm going to answer some of your questions. Got some really good ones about Hugh Freeze, about Auburn basketball, and Auburn as a whole. So really looking forward to closing out the show with that. And we're going to do a really fun segment where I will give my top Bruce Pearl era players, my top Bruce Pearl era team. So really looking forward to that segment. So there's plenty to get into, so we're not going to waste any more time. Let's start out with the announcement that came last Wednesday that Jahni Broome is returning to Auburn for a fifth year, his third year on the Plains. This was huge. There was not a bigger offseason move that Auburn could make than returning, getting Jahni Broome to return. So hats off to Bruce Pearl and this Auburn staff for making this happen, to sell Jahni Broome and his family on coming back. It was really a re-recruitment to sell Jahni Broome, and I think that his family is very high on Auburn, is very high on Bruce Pearl and his staff. And then hats off as well to Auburn's NIL collective. Folks have a lot more money than I do, able to pull together a substantial amount of money. I'm sure, I have no clue what it is, but I'm sure it's substantial to be able to get him to return. And that's a positive of NIL. We like to talk about a lot of the negatives, but that is a positive. Before NIL, there's no way Jahni Broome returns for another year at Auburn. He could have gone to the NBA. There's plenty of tampering as well with him from other schools trying to get him to come there. But he's going to return to Auburn, and that is huge. So where does this leave the Auburn team, the Auburn roster? Well, now you're looking at 10 spots have been filled. So you've got your starting lineup, theoretically, set at this point for next season. You're looking right now, in my opinion, and I think in a lot of people's minds, as a preseason top 10 team, if not top 10, hard to see Auburn being anywhere outside of the top 15. A lot of rosters still have to be completed, so we're still not sure on what everybody's going to look at. But if you're looking at way too early projections right now, most everyone has Auburn top 15 at least, if not top 10. You're looking at a team that's going to be close to the favorite for SEC preseason favorite. We don't know what the Alabama roster is going to end up looking like, Tennessee, Kentucky. But you're looking at a team that's going to have extremely high expectations going into next season. There's still a few roster spots open. There's three technically, but typically Bruce Pearl does not fill the 13th spot. Usually he'll just fill the two other spots. So we're still looking at, as I mentioned last few weeks, at a backup point guard and a backup four, I'm guessing, although that they could be a little bit flexible with that because Chris Moore could play the four position. Jakai Howard could possibly play the four position if they desire, but that's my guess. Auburn's looking at a backup point guard and a backup power forward role. But looking at this team as is, with that Jahni Broome announcement coming back, this is a team that is going to have probably the highest expectations that any Auburn team in the Bruce Pearl has had because of what this team accomplished last year and how good of this team was last season to be returning the best player, that being Jani Broome, to be returning Chad Baker-Mazzara and Denver Jones and Chaney Johnson, and then theoretically elevating the point guard position by bringing in J.P. Pegues from Furman. You're looking at a team that is going to be expected to be really good and should be expected to be really good. The expectations are going to be extremely high. This is going to be an extremely hyped team in the preseason. I will certainly hype them up, I'm sure, next year on this show before we get into the season. We'll begin next year in October and November. We'll have plenty of time to talk about that, but it's hard not to be excited about this team, although it's just still only April, and the season only ended just about a month ago. But it is an exciting time. Really intrigued to see how this roster will finish up. I don't expect any star players to come in and join what is already a really good roster. I think you're going to have to take some guys that may have been overlooked a little bit. They won't have that opportunity to compete for those backup four position and for the backup point guard position. But I'm sure Bruce Pearl will find some talented players to come in and finish out these final two roster spots. But that was great news. Great news last week that Jani Broome is going to return for Auburn. But with that being said, I've got to address the elephant in the room, pun intended. Aiden Holloway, I talked about on last week's show, which did not age well at all, that Aiden Holloway would be supported by Auburn fans. He was well-liked by Auburn fans, and I'd be rooting for him wherever he went. Oh, boy. I had no clue at that point that he was going to go to Alabama, or else I wouldn't have said all of that. But that's where he decided to go. Aiden Holloway committed to Alabama on Saturday. So let me just first say, before I get into what I think about this, that I had no issue with him or Trey Donaldson transferring. The Auburn staff had no issue with it. Would they have liked for one of them, if not both, to return? Sure, maybe so. But Auburn was also intent on going and elevating that position. And they did that. They went and got J.P. Pegues. So they were going to add him no matter what Trey Donaldson and Aiden Holloway decided. Auburn did not push hard to get either back, I do not believe. That was just a fact of the matter of that situation. That doesn't mean that they pushed them out the door necessarily, but Auburn was intent on improving the position, and I believe they did that. Secondly, I hate transferring to a rival school, but it just speaks more to the era that we're in. Literally, just about 30 minutes to an hour ago, a guy from Ohio State announced he's transferring to Michigan. So there's just another example. It makes you a lot more appreciative of guys like Jalen Williams, of guys like Dylan Cardwell, who have played their entire careers at Auburn. And you're grateful for that. But again, I can't say that it's wrong that players are looking more out for themselves now than anything else. It's just the fact of the situation that we're in. So I don't like it, but I understand the players are just looking for what's in their best interest. The rivalries at the end of the day don't matter near as much to them, to most players, as it does to fans, and you just have to live with that as a fan. I was trying to think, though, of examples in major sports of players from Auburn or Alabama who have transferred to the other school in the rivalry. I am not well-versed. Again, this is only I'm only 20 years old, so I have not been around for forever. But in my little bit of research, I struggled to find any example in college basketball. Now, you may know of one. I certainly could have missed it. But I believe this might be the first example of a player going to play for both Auburn and Alabama in the basketball side of the rivalry. As for football, there's one prominent example in football. That was Corey Grant, who transferred from Alabama to Auburn. You remember him, the running back during Gus Malzahn's era. And then just recently, in the previous transfer portal, Antonio Kite transferred from Alabama to Auburn after Nick Saban's retirement. So those are two examples I could think of off the top of my head. Of course, there's been a good bit of of coaches who have coached at both places. There's that, but that's different than players, in my opinion. It's just a weird time in collegiate athletics, and I think it's just something that we're not going to like, but it's something we're going to have to deal with. We've seen a lot more, I think, between Auburn and Georgia than we have Auburn and Alabama in the crossover of guys playing for both universities. But before I get into Aidan Holloway's comments, I want to say this, and Bruce Pearl doesn't need me to defend him on this whole situation. He doesn't. But before I get into the comments, I want to make this clear that I am in no way attacking Aidan Holloway's character. That would be completely inappropriate of me to do, and I don't know him personally, so I don't want anyone to take it in that way, and that's certainly not my goal in addressing this situation. But I felt as if the comments were substantial enough, and because of how I've talked about Aidan Holloway all year, that I need to address it. Plus, it's a hot topic for Auburn fans. It has been a hot topic all weekend. So I am going to address his comments, but sorry to hit you with that tease. Before I do, we're going to go to our first break here. But when we return, I will dive in to what Aidan Holloway had to say about transferring to Alabama from Auburn. So stay tuned to Talking Tumors on Weagle 91.1.
So who's going to do what?
He's the segment before tossing it to commercial. Let me read the quote from Aidan Holloway. I'm sure many of you have seen it, but just in case you have not seen the quote, that way you understand what in the world am I talking about, let me read that to you, and then I'll dive into it. This was an interview Aidan Holloway did with Bama 24/7 Sports. Quote, "At Auburn, I kind of got sold a dream by my coach. The season started out good for me individually and as a team, and then he kind of went in a different direction with the offense. I was just kind of taken out of the offense as a playmaker and like a decision maker. I was just on the court when it came to offense. It was just tough for me." End of quote from Aidan Holloway. First of all, before I even get into the actual content of the quote there from Aidan Holloway, I just thought it was unnecessary. There was no reason to, even if you felt that way personally, there's just no reason to make that quote. And there's no reason to go after Bruce Pearl. And again, Bruce Pearl does not need me to defend him, but the comment was just, it was uncalled for, quite frankly. Even if you agree with the content, which I'm going to show you how I don't believe what he said is backed in facts. But the proper thing to do in that situation, in my opinion, if you're Aidan Holloway, is to just say, I'm appreciative of my time at Auburn, but I felt it was best to have a new start here. And then you can talk about why. And he did talk about why he decided to transfer to Alabama. But there was no reason to go into detail, even if you're asked. And that's nothing on the writer's fault for asking him the question of why things went the way they did at Auburn. That's fine, but he didn't need to, in my opinion, didn't need to go into those details. Or if he did want to go into details, there was no reason to attack Bruce Pearl, and it was unjustly. And I disagree with the sentiment of the statement, and I think it was inappropriate the way that he answered it. Again, I'm not attacking Aidan Holloway's character at all. I think Aidan Holloway, as I've said all year, is a good dude. I just think that he shouldn't have said the statement should not have been delivered in the way that it was. I think he should have handled that question a little bit differently, but that was his right. But now to the matter of what he said in the quote. We don't know what all went on behind the scenes. Not many people do, except Aidan Holloway, except for Bruce Pearl, except for the other players on that team. But what we do know is that what he said was not based in facts. Aidan Holloway talked about not having a big role in the offense. He talked about how the season started off well. That is true. He had a great game against Baylor, and really throughout non-conference, he seemed to shoot the ball really well. It wasn't until the end of non-conference, into SEC play, that he really started to struggle shooting from three. But the fact that he felt as he wasn't a big part of the offense or didn't get the opportunities that he felt he deserved, that he was sold a dream, it just it just isn't true based on the stats. Aiden Holloway shot 172 threes this past season at Auburn. The next closest was Denver Jones, who shot 122. And Denver Jones led the team in three-point shooting percentage, and Aiden Holloway only shot 30%. He was third in shot attempts per game. The next closest was 50 shots behind him, yet he was 11th on the team in field goal percentage. Aiden had every opportunity to succeed at Auburn. Bruce Pearl did not sell him a dream. He gave him ample opportunity to succeed. Bruce Pearl continued to support him throughout the year. Even in his struggles, Bruce Pearl never said anything but positive things about Aiden Holloway and about the confidence he had in him. He praised his poise. He praised his ability to handle the struggles and how he continued to fight and continued to do good things. Assist to turnover ratio, he pointed those things out. There are quotes that I was able to go back and find from January, from February, from March, where Bruce Pearl is continuing to talk about Aiden Holloway and continuing to encourage him. He continued to start Aiden Holloway even when Aiden did not deserve to, even when he was struggling mightily as a true freshman. Bruce Pearl continued to let him start. He pulled him out for a few games and thought that maybe bringing him off the bench would help a little bit. It didn't, and when it didn't, he put him back in the starting rotation. So it's just not true. Again, we don't know what all went on behind the scenes, but just based on the stats and just based on how the amount of minutes Aiden Holloway played and the amount of shots he got to put up, it's just not true that he wasn't given the opportunity to succeed at Auburn. So I want to read this quote now from Bruce Pearl, just to give you just one example of the things that Bruce Pearl said throughout the year. He said something similar on multiple different occasions, but here's one. I believe this one is from either January or early February. Quote, "I could probably count on one hand the number of bad shots Aiden has taken all season. Now, he's probably taken more shots that others would think more than that, but I think it's going in every time he shoots it, even if they're bad shots. That's how great of a shooter he is, and that's how hard he works at his shooting." Bruce Pearl continued that sentiment all throughout the year, continued to back him in his struggles, and that's what frustrated me so much about Aiden Holloway's statements. It's just it was not fair to a coach who publicly defended you, publicly encouraged you all season long, even when he could have easily thrown you under the bus, as many other coaches are prone to do in college basketball. I thought it was an unnecessary shot and completely unfair for Aiden Holloway to say what he said about Bruce Pearl. Now, on him transferring to Alabama, Nate Oates has a very guard-friendly system, and I think Aiden Holloway has a chance to succeed there. But he certainly could have succeeded at Auburn. Bruce Pearl's offense is far from not guard-friendly. Plenty of guards have had success in his system at Auburn, and plenty more will do so in the future. I think if Aiden Holloway had stayed at Auburn, he would have shot at a higher percentage next season. Regression to the mean says that that's going to be the case. So just preemptively getting out ahead of any comments that could possibly be made next year when Aiden Holloway improves his shooting, I think he would have done that anywhere, whether it was Auburn, Alabama, wherever he ended up going next season. But we'll see. I'm done talking about this until the Iron Bowl of basketball next season. But it was too hot of a topic to ignore, and I couldn't help but address it. And plenty of other people have as well addressed that it was just an unnecessary statement, and it wasn't based in facts. So I'll leave it at that. Again, this is not a shot at Aiden Holloway's character. I defended his character all season. I still believe he is a good dude. I just think that he may have should have thought through that statement a little bit more before he made it. Even if he was frustrated personally, which I get that, frustrated about how his season went, he should have just been more careful about the way he delivered that quote. But moving on now, shifting gears to Auburn football in the latest on the roster news. So the transfer portal opened last week, and well, there wasn't a ton of news, surprisingly, from the Auburn side. You had one guy enter on the first day, and that was Brenton Williams, the redshirt freshman edge defender for Auburn out of Opelika, Alabama. I actually mentioned him after A-Day. I mentioned that I thought he had a good A-Day, and he was someone that stood out to me, but was still buried on the depth chart, I believe, a little bit. So he's looking for other opportunities. So he entered the transfer portal. But that was really it for a while until we got Jay Fair this past weekend. The wide receiver entered the portal. So that's only the second portal entry from Auburn so far. There could still be more. I believe the portal's open for about another week. So there could still be more. Probably will still be some. But as of right now, as of Monday morning at 10:22, and there have only been two portal entries out of Auburn. Jay Fair was a more notable one than Brenton Williams, and I got asked the question, why did Jay Fair enter the portal? I think it was more just Auburn has Caleb Burton at the slot position. Then they brought in Sam Jackson from Cal. So maybe Jay Fair thought he was going to be buried a little bit more on the depth chart. I'm not sure that would have been true. I think he would have been given every opportunity to start and to have that starting slot position at wide receiver. He was Auburn's second leading receiver in receptions last season, which isn't saying a ton considering how poor the passing offense was last year. But nonetheless, he was. So he would have had the opportunity, but I'm not overly concerned about this loss in the receiver room with the talent Auburn has added here. And with what could still be to come, Auburn could still add another receiver in the portal. So yes, it's a loss, but not a huge one. There's nobody in that receiver room that could leave that, besides, of course, the new guys like Cam Coleman and Robert Lewis, that I would be tremendously upset or think that it was a huge loss to Auburn. So wish Jay Fair nothing but the best. He was a Brian Harsin recruit. He probably outperformed expectations because he was a three-star recruit coming out of high school. But he is not, in my opinion, a huge loss for this Auburn team. Now, Auburn did get a transfer portal commit yesterday. Philip Blitty, if I mispronounced it, I apologize. He was a defensive line transfer from Indiana, had 30 total tackles last season, 6'3", 295. We knew Auburn was going to attack the transfer portal hard at the defensive line position. We knew this was a position of need. Hugh Freeze said as much. Needed to add talent, needed to add depth to this position, especially on the interior. And Auburn has taken a step in doing just that. They need another piece or two, but this was a very, very important get and will help improve the defensive line, I believe, next season. So, big time. Blighty was highly sought after by multiple different high-level programs. To be able to lock him down was a big-time job. Great job by Hugh Freeze and the staff, Ontrell King Williams, the new defensive line coach, did a good job there. As of other guys who we know have taken visits to Auburn, was Edge Kerryon Crawford from Arkansas State. He is on a visit as we speak, I do believe. He is one to watch here. Auburn did want to add some more depth to that edge position behind Jalen McLeod. Of course, you had Jamonte Waller coming in there, but needed more depth at that position. Of course, we mentioned Brenton Williams leaving. So Kerryon Crawford would bring some depth to that position. So hopefully Auburn can lock him down. And then at the wide receiver position, as I mentioned just a second ago, Hugh Freeze was looking to add another receiver to this room. Arguably the best receiver in the transfer portal took a visit to Auburn this past weekend. Wide receiver Keandre Lambert-Smith was Penn State's leading receiver. Very, very good player. He's going to be hard to get. He's taking visits elsewhere, but Auburn did get the first visit, which is a big deal. We'll see what happens here, if they're able to land him or not. That would be a huge, huge get to be able to get him out of the transfer portal. If not, I think Auburn will still be looking to add another receiver if they can. From the portal. We'll see. Again, not a ton of good options at the receiver position, so teams are going to be desperate. How desperate is Auburn to spend the money necessary, possibly, to get someone like a Keandre Lambert-Smith? I'm not sure. I feel like they're a lot more desperate for defensive line than receiver, but you could add another win if you can get someone like a Keandre Lambert. That's how big of a difference I believe he can make to this team. As for defensive line, another guy to watch who's making his announcement today, so by the time you're listening to this show, he could have committed, is Isaiah Rikes from Texas A&M via USC. You remember there's the SEC, you can't transfer from A&M to Auburn in the spring transfer portal window, but he transferred to USC from A&M, and now he is back in the portal, and I think Auburn could be the team that he chooses based on predictions from multiple different recruiting industry sites over the last couple of days. Auburn, it came down to USC and Auburn the first time around. He chose USC. Now he's back in the portal. If Auburn's able to land Rikes along with Blitty, that would really cement a strong transfer portal defensive line class, and then add Edge, Kerryon Crawford in there, and I think Auburn would be set at that point. Adding those three guys would add tremendous depth and talent and would help improve, at least theoretically, the defensive line room for Auburn. So that's the latest news on the roster front. Not really as much as I was expecting there to be over the past week. We'll see what happens over the coming week. But that's how we leave it for now for Auburn football. Alrighty, with that, we will head to our second break. When we return, going to dive into a fun segment into Bruce, an all-time Bruce Pearl era basketball team. You won't want to miss it. Stay tuned to Talking Tumors on Weagle 91.1. Hi. Now, I've had it on the docket, just haven't had the time to get around to it until this week, and this was the last chance to get to it for a while, so I knew I had to get it into today's show. I'm going to give you my all-time Bruce Pearl era basketball team. It is now, Bruce Pearl has now had 10 years on the plane, so plenty of years now to stack up some really good players, and we know he has had plenty at Auburn. So I'm sure that many will disagree. I think there's some non-controversial players in here, but I think there could be some that you listeners might disagree with. You might have a different starting five than I do, and that's fine. I totally expect that. There have been so many really good players you can make an argument for on this list. So I'm going to go five starters, five backups, and then I'll have a couple of honorable mentions in there. So let's start out with at the point guard position. I don't think this one's controversial. I've got Jared Harper as my point guard on this all-time Bruce Pearl team. He averaged 15.3 points per game, almost six assists, and shot 37% from three in the final four season, his final year at Auburn. Just a tremendous player, someone who will always be remembered so fondly because of that final four run. You couldn't have anyone else but Jared Harper, I think, as your all-time Bruce Pearl era starting point guard. At the two position, I've got Bryce Brown, also from that final four year. But what Bryce Brown did throughout his Auburn career is kind of forgotten. He played at Auburn for 4 years. In his final season on the Plains, averaged 16 points per game, 41% from three. He also had second most all-time in made threes in SEC history. Just a tremendous, tremendous player for Auburn. The scoring guard position has not been as big of a strength of Auburn since Bryce Brown, and so it was hard to really make an argument against him at this position. But that's not take anything away from Bryce Brown. He was a phenomenal player, and I think he is certainly deserving of being the starting two guards. You got that backcourt from that Final Four team as your all time Bruce Pearl era backcourt team, in my opinion, as well. So Bryce Brown, Jared Harper paired together once again on this theoretical team here I've got. At the three position, I went with Isaac Okoro. This one was challenging for me. There were a couple of different options. No one has been truly, truly elite at this position. Now, you do this list again a year from now, maybe Chad Baker-Mazzara slips on there, but with just 1 year, I couldn't put him there yet, as good of a year as he had. There are some other considerations that I'll talk about just in a minute. But Isaac Okoro is who I went with. Just didn't get to see a ton of time from him, which also made it difficult to put in there because I did value the amount of games you played at Auburn, the amount of time that a guy spent on the plane. So Isaac Okoro, remember, you may not, because that year was so short. He played in the COVID year at Auburn, where the season was cut short. So he had 13. He averaged 13 points per game that year, though. 4.4 rebounds, was a elite defender, and he's carried that over now into the NBA. Of course, that what you've done in the pros play no factor into to this all Bruce Pearl era team. Simply what you did at Auburn. But I've got Isaac Okoro as my starting three. Starting four, I don't think anyone's arguing this one. This one was really, really easy. Jabari Smith, just phenomenal player at Auburn. 17 points per game, 7.4 rebounds per game, 42% from three, an All-American. He was so fun to watch. And, you know, I wish so much that team had been able to make a deeper run in the NCAA tournament, that we'd gotten to watch more games of him and Walker Kessler. Just one of the best players you ever play at Auburn University. So really, really enjoyed watching him at Auburn, and it was going to be hard-pressed to put anyone else at the starting four position on an all-Bruce Pearl-era team besides Jabari Smith. At the five position, this is where I think there could be possibly some disagreement, some controversy, but if you really look at it, there shouldn't be. I've got Jahni Broome here. 16.5 points per game last season, 8.5 rebounds, and he was an All-American. Plus, he's coming back for a third season at Auburn. All those things play a factor into it. I don't think this will even be a debate after this upcoming season, where he will have a really solid chance at repeating as an All-American, have a chance to be preseason SEC Player of the Year. I think it's hard-pressed. I know you can make a good argument for Walker Kessler, but when you look at Jahni Broome's stats and what he has meant to Auburn and what he will mean to Auburn in the upcoming season, I've got to go Jahni Broome here. So my starting five, just to repeat, Jared Harper at the one, Bryce Brown at the two, Isaac Okoro at the three, Jabari Smith at the four, and Jahni Broome at the five. That would be a very, very good lineup and would be fun to play with in a video game world there. Now, as for the bench, this could also be a little controversial. There could be some debate. I've got Samir Dowdy as the backup point guard. Now, hearing that, say, well, Samir played the two. That is correct. He did, but he also played some backup point guard during that Final Four run. So I wanted to get him into the backup role in order to do that, because of who I have at the two position, who I'll tell you about in just a minute. I had to put Samir Dowdy as the backup point guard. Really hate that team with him and Javon McCormick did not get to make a run in March. That was a really good team in the 2019-2020 season that got canceled in February of that year once COVID hit. But Samir Dowdy scored 16.7 points per game in his final year at Auburn. Really, really phenomenal player. Really good three-point shooter. Could score at all three levels. Was a fun, super fun guy to watch. So I hate that season got cut short. He transferred in from VCU to Auburn. And now it'll make sense of why I had him as my backup point guard, because I've got KT Harrell. Yes, a little bit of a throwback, a guy who played in Bruce Pearl's first year as head coach of Auburn. As you'll notice, there really hasn't been anyone on this list who was not within the last, I believe, about 5 years of the Bruce Pearl era, because it took some time for Bruce Pearl to build this program, to develop this program. But KT Harrell is an exception to that rule. 18.5 points per game in his final year at Auburn, and he shot, get this, 44% from three. He was tremendous. With those stats, you could have argued him over Bryce Brown as the starting two guard. I'll give you that. But I have him coming off the bench. Just a phenomenal player, and has a connection being from my hometown of Montgomery, Alabama. And then at the three, I've got Chuma Okeke. Now, got to make a note here, I'm being a little facetious with my positions. Chuma did play the four at Auburn, but I'm putting him in that backup three role because I wanted to get him in here. He had 12 points per game, averaged 12 points per game, 6.8 rebounds, and 39% from three in the final 4 year. On that team, he actually played 2 years at Auburn, which I think is a little bit forgotten because of how high he was drafted in the NBA. But he played 2 years at Auburn, could have made the argument of starting him over Isaac Okoro, But I'm going Chuma as a backup here coming off of the bench. The reason I had him at the three is because I couldn't keep Jalen Williams off of an all-time Bruce Pearl era team. Played 5 years, 5 years at Auburn. Averaged 12.4 points per game this past season, shooting nearly 40% from three. So I've got him backing up Jabari Smith, which is what he did 2 years ago for Auburn. I've said plenty about Jalen Williams. There's not much more I can say. He was a phenomenal player. I hope he gets the opportunity at the next level, but absolutely had to have him on this all-time Bruce Pearl team. And then in the backup five, of course, I've got Walker Kessler, as I mentioned. I had Jani Broome over him. Some might have Walker starting. He probably is the best rim protector Auburn basketball has ever seen. He averaged 4.6 blocks per game. That is an incredible, incredible number. 8 rebounds per game, 11.4 points per game. His offense is what knocked him down, in my opinion, off of starting. But I've got him coming off the bench, and Jani Broome and Walker Kessler center rotation would be incredible on a theoretical team. As for the honorable mentions, I've got Javon McCormick as an honorable mention as a point guard. Played 2 years at Auburn, came from the JUCO level, was a part of that really, really good team that I mentioned with Samir Dowdy. He and Samir were a fantastic backcourt for Auburn that season. It was hard to keep him off the list. And then Sharif Cooper. I know many, many people probably would have had Sharif on here as the backup point guard possibly, or even as a starter. The reason I kept Sharif off, as good as he was, it was just the number of games, really, that he played at Auburn, because not only was he unfairly withheld and declared ineligible by the NCAA for a good portion of that season, it was also the COVID season where Auburn was ineligible from the postseason. So there were a lot of factors as to why I didn't have Sharif on that list, but I certainly understand those that would have wanted him to be on there. If he had come back and played another year at Auburn, certainly would have had him on the list. He might have even made it to into a starting role. I think he could have made that big of a difference with Jabari Smith and Walker Kessler. But those two guys get honorable mentions. There are other guys who could have been in there that you might have had in as an honorable mention or even on in the starting team. I'm sure there, as I mentioned, plenty of disagreements, but that's fine. That is my all-time Bruce Pearl era team. That was really, really fun to dive into and really break down. So I hope you enjoyed that segment, and let me know your thoughts on it. Alrighty, with that, we will head to our final break before I answer your questions to close out Talking Tumors Year 2. Stay tuned. I asked for your questions on social media this past week, and I got a few that I want to get into. I don't have time to get to all of them, but this is a really good question here. The question was asked, what is Hugh Freeze's ceiling at Auburn and when will he achieve it? Really, really good question. In the new age of college football, it is going to be extremely difficult to win your conference. With the conferences being as big as they are now, the SEC probably going to continue to grow. Big Ten is going to continue to grow. So I think we have to adjust expectations a little bit. I don't think it's fair now, like back in the day when the SEC was 12 or 14 teams, to just be able to look at it and say, winning your conference every few years, being in contention to win it every year, that's what will determine success. So I don't think that's going to be a fair metric anymore. It would be great to win your conference and to be able to compete in your conference. That's one thing. But to expect to constantly be competing for a conference championship, I think is not going to be fair. I think actually, a more fair expectation would be to be constantly competing to be in the playoff and making a run in the college football playoffs, because I think that's going to be more attainable than winning and being in the SEC championship year in and year out. So, for Hugh Freeze, personally, I think ceiling is a consistent 9-10 win team. You might have some 8 wins scattered in there, but also with a 11 win or possibly maybe even pushing for an undefeated season. But I think can you consistently get to 9-10 wins? If you do that, you're going to have a chance at 9-3 in the SEC to be in the college football playoff since it's at 12 teams. With 10 wins, you're probably definitely in the college football playoff. So I think those are fair expectations. when do I think Auburn could get there? I still lean towards year three as the year that Hugh Freeze has circled. Now, I'm not saying Auburn's definitely making college football playoff in year three, but that's what I'm circling as. Maybe that's the first year Hugh Freeze gets to 9 or 10 wins. Maybe that's the year that Auburn does make a push. Not saying it for certain, so I would say more comfortably, I think year four or year five, but I think you'll have a chance to make that push in year three. You get to that 9 or 10 win mark year in and year out, you're going to put yourselves in contention to be in the college football playoff. You're there. You're going to have a chance to win a national championship. Yes, it would be nice to be competitive and have a chance at the SEC championship, but a lot of that's going to have to depend on who you play, who your losses come to against in the SEC, because there are no divisions anymore. So that's why I think you have to adjust just a little bit the expectations now and how you should determine success. So really like that question, and I think that's a fair answer to it. Another question I got was, will Bruce Pearl make another Final Four? I certainly hope so, and I think that if Bruce Pearl is going to do it, because I do think that he only has a few more years left, it could be up to five, but I think it's only a handful of years left. I think this next season is going to be the best chance he has had to do it since last season, really. I think last season was a great opportunity. Auburn wasn't able to capitalize on it, and so this next season, theoretically, with the roster Auburn has returning, with the additions they made, I think this will be Bruce Pearl's last best chance to make it. We don't know how many more years he has for sure. We don't know what other rosters he's going to have, but I do know 2 years from now, Auburn's going to have a ton of new faces, which is going to make it much more difficult. Anything can happen. We know how insane the NCAA tournament is, and a lot of times the teams that you don't expect to make the deep run are the ones that do. But just looking at it from a big perspective here, I think if Auburn and Bruce Pearl is going to make another run, have a chance to win a national championship, his best chance is going to be this upcoming season with the team that is returning. It doesn't mean that it'll happen. It doesn't mean that he wouldn't make it with another team before he retires. But I think he's going to have a really, really good chance to make the Final Four. So I know I'm waffling a little bit on this answer. Will Bruce Pearl make another Final Four? I'm going to say yes. Maybe that's the optimist in me, but I'm going to say yes. I do believe Bruce Pearl will make another Final Four at Auburn. So there you go. There's my bold prediction for the year for you. Yeah, I don't love those. I am definitely a fence rider, as I think many of you who have listened to the show would admit. Then I got a question on, how would I grade the job that John Cohen has done as athletic director? It's crazy to think, but come October, it'll be 2 years on the job for John Cohen. I think he's done a tremendous, tremendous job. I think he did a great job in the hiring process of the football coach and ended up hiring Hugh Freeze there. I like the way he handles things, the business-like approach. He is working towards continuing to make the proper facility upgrades that need to be done. He started that process with Auburn baseball. Still need facility upgrades at Jordan-Hare Stadium. I believe those are in the works. Some of those things he can't control because the money has to be there. But he is pushing for those things to be done. I like the way he handled the coaching searches. I like the way he admits that he's the guy that's in charge, that decisions are his. And that comes back to what Chris Roberts has done, President Roberts has done for Auburn as well, giving John Cohen that ability. So I really appreciate what he has done. I would give him an A for the job he has done so far. He hasn't had to make any other big hires besides football, but that's a pretty big one to start out with, having to make a football hire in what is the biggest sport in the South down here. He'll have to make a hire for the Auburn softball job. I believe the Auburn women's tennis job may be open as well there. So he'll have to make some hires in some other sports. I would love to see him possibly name Stephen Pearl head coach in waiting, as they talked about on last week's show. But overall, I cannot complain. I think John Cohen has done a really, really good job in just a short period of time here at Auburn. So those were a couple of the questions that I got that I wanted to answer. But just to close things out here, I just want to thank you all for listening. If you've been a listener, just a recent listener this year, whether you've listened for the first 2 years we've done this show, I have such a fun time getting to do this show. I hope that you enjoy listening. I'm incredibly appreciative of the ability that I have to be able to do this show. As I mentioned earlier, the show could look a little different next year. I'm not sure if we'll still air live. It may just be in podcast form. That is still to be decided. We'll see what that looks like for Talking Tumors, but I can promise you Talking Tumors will be back next year, and we will have plenty to dive into as far as Auburn sports. The summertime is a busy time for Auburn football recruiting, so there will be plenty of news that will happen. Make sure that you're following me on social media, especially on X, at Talking Tumors. That's going to be my best way to still be able to get content out, to get thoughts out on what all is occurring in the world of Auburn sports, because just because we're off air doesn't mean that Auburn takes a break or takes a hiatus. So make sure you're tuned in there. And Talking Tumors will be back. We will see you next year. But for one last time, I am Carson Horn. Here's the outro. We'll see you next year. Thank you for listening to Talking Tumors. Make sure to tune in again next Monday at 10 for another edition. Also, make sure to check out Weagle's 24-hour live stream on WeagleFM.com. And follow us on social media at Weagle_AU. War Eagle, and see you next time.